As my friend, it is so good to be talking to you. And today of all days, because there was some great news that was dropped. Would you care to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I am so thrilled to share with the world that the long-awaited Valinor premiere is scheduled. People can buy tickets right now for the June 4th premiere of the movie Valinor, which stars none other than one Chance Gilliam, along with a few other great actors, Krista Rose and Tristan and Jamie Hoke. And we are thrilled to death to share this film with the world finally. It has been a long, strange trip.
That's life though, right? It's one long, strange trip. And yeah, definitely, I mean, a lot of work has gone into this. It's gonna be awesome to see a finished product in a room full of friends, and that's something that I'm really looking forward to here in a few weeks.
Absolutely.
But man, talk about perseverance through the duration of this project. It seems like, in my experience, things never quite go to the timelines that we set out, but maybe you could speak to just given your experience to this point and having worked on projects that takes a considerable amount of time and energy, lots of moving pieces, lots of different contributors. But I mean, what's that feel like to actually continue to return to a project, not only over weeks or months, but in this case, over a few years, and to finally put a wrap on that? What kind of perseverance does that take?
Well, interestingly enough, you talk about coming back to it. To be completely candid, I never left it. I really subscribe when it comes to the creative process, to certain models and routines. And there's five stages of production. Doesn't matter if you're making a children's kindergarten Christmas pageant or $500 million Marvel movie. You're going to go through those same five stages of production, and there are development and pre-production and production, post-production and distribution, and those things are universal. And I have a lot of projects, and I think all of my projects are in one stage or another, and I keep trying to chip away at them and take steps forward in them as much as I can to get them to finally go through all those stages. And so Valinor in particular created very unforeseen challenges in the post-production stage for a wide sundry of reasons. And this project was awesome because we made it in the middle of a pandemic. Very, very guerrilla filmmaking style. Just a bunch of yahoos, no permits, all in state parks, national parks, county parks, city parks, on the run and under the gun, so to speak. And it was just a blast to make. And when we, the producers, got into the post-production problems, we always knew that we were going to get it to cross the finish line because it was just too much fun and too much. What am I trying to say? We love the people so much, and we love the story so much, and it's such a sweet, fun idea that we just couldn't ever find ourselves even considering giving up on it. So we had to just find ways to overcome the hurdles. And the truth is, I think we're all better for it. So I'm super proud of this film. It's definitely no budget, low budget, fun underground filmmaking. It's just going to be a celebration that we got it to the finish line with all of our awesome and wonderful friends. I can't encourage people enough to come regardless of what they think of the movie, it's going to be a great time because there's so much love and happiness and positive energy surrounding this project. You just can't help yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's cool to hear you describe this this 5-step process and the things that you're working on being in various stages at different times. Do you feel like that kind of keeps it fresh for you in the sense of if one thing is hitting a roadblock or you just need to take your mind off of it, you have something that you can turn to while still being within that realm of film. Any thoughts
Yeah,
there?
absolutely. Absolutely. I try, one of my secrets is I try to touch it every day. Whatever projects I'm working on, I try to at least look at it, make a phone call, send out an email, get an update, plan something, investigate something, research something. And I think that helps keep it moving along. I subscribe to the idea that how do you eat an elephant, Chance? You eat it one bite at a time. There's no other way to do it. And so every film project starts off with a brilliant idea in the development stage from somebody. That doesn't necessarily mean it's my idea. People bring me scripts all the time saying, hey, I want to do this. And so first it starts with idea, then it starts with a script, then it starts with, a schedule and strategy and storyboards and casting and all the different phases, and it's just a blast. It's I've done it I've been very blessed to having done it at different stages at the highest level of the game, and I've been blessed to do it at the most ragtag weekend warrior amateur level of the game. And there's so many things that are different about those two levels, but there's so many things that are the same. And one of my fellow three-headed monster brothers, Brian Stenerson, had the opportunity to go to a lecture to listen to one of our heroes, Roger Deakins, give a lecture in the Twin Cities recently. And somebody asked him, if you're a young person and you want to get into film, how do you do it? And his answer was simply, just go do it. Just do it. It's so easy to you can make a movie with your phone. You can, put a couple of posts on Facebook, start talking to people. And if you want to get it done, you can get it done. I'm not saying it's easy, but I am saying it's very possible. And if you want to do it bad enough, you can go do it. That's what's so great about film and television, especially in these days, is you don't have to be in Hollywood. You can be in the Twin Cities, you can be in Nashville, you can be in Atlanta. I live in a rural area and we make films all the time on in our neighbor's back 40 farm, in a local restaurant balcony. If you want to do it, you just go out and do it.
So true, so true. I'd actually like to turn back towards your own stage of development, let's say as an individual. How did you initially get into the arts? I don't really know, Taz. What was your entry point? Was it something that you had in like your household growing up or like a school production? Where'd this start for you?
That's an excellent question, Chance. So when I was a kid, I grew up with a lot of athletes and military people in my family. And this was about, 1,000 years ago, because I'm an old man now. But they didn't know as much about smoking as they do now. And my mom actually smoked all through her pregnancy into my early years. And when I was 9 years old, I got asthma pretty severely, and it's pretty life-threatening. And they didn't know much about asthma like they do now. And just the reality of not being able to be an athlete like my siblings. My brother played football for University of Nebraska, and this, that, and the other, and And just realizing I wasn't going to be able to follow in those footsteps was a real drag and a real setback. I was a sad little kid knowing I couldn't be like them. And then I landed in a classroom. It was actually a public school classroom with a lady who used to direct on Broadway, and she was just teaching English in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she did after school plays, and she saw something in me. I auditioned for the play because I, you don't, you can be a kid with asthma and still do theater. And she saw something in me, and she decided to take me under her wing, and she pushed me really, really hard. She said, "I think you have what it takes, kid," and she got me in some Shakespeare classes, some advanced Shakespeare classes, and workshops, and just opened up a lot of theatrical opportunities for me. And I was sort of off to the races. And so I started out on the stage, and I became a professional actor with all my training. By very young age, at 14, I was making money as a stage actor, and decided I wanted to do that for a living. So at 16, I graduated high school early so I could hit the road as a stage actor. And I was very fortunate. I was able to see the world from the stage and all over the United States and really North America and Europe. And but this was, Chance, this was at a time when there was no internet and phone calls were long distance, and living out of a suitcase, and you'd fall in love with these people that you did the show with, and you'd be with them for anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months. But when the show ended, they'd go back to their homes because you were with them 24/7. You traveled with them, you rehearsed with them, you partied with them after the show. Maybe you had a production romance, and it was like this awesome family, but then it would end. And I hated when it ended. It was just getting too hard on me because I'm a pretty passionate, emotional guy who likes people. I love people. And so I was getting kind of tired of the whole scene. And then I had a setback. That same brother I mentioned died very early. He was 29 and I was 21. He's my older brother, and we were very close. And I decided, I think I'm going to hang up the acting thing for a while, settle down. And I went to college, studied journalism, and was a newspaper reporter for about 4 years. Decided there was no money in that. So I stepped back and I thought, now I know a thing or two about business. I've been around. I know a lot about acting, and I want to get back into the entertainment industry. All that equals producer and director. And so I started producing and directing in my mid to late 20s. And then I just really never looked back and went from there.
And that at this point is what a 20-plus year journey since you started in that field.
Well, yeah, I mean, I started really doing stage work when I was 10, 11, somewhere in there. But you want to know what's even crazier? So you can look this up. Way, way, way back, when I was born in October, and the following Christmas, I was actually on national TV behind Walter Cronkite in a live living nativity scene. I was the baby Jesus. And there were people dressed up as Mary and Joseph and all that. And I was the baby Jesus in the manger. So I got my national start when I was 3 months old. That's just one of the family jokes we've got,
Oh
that I
my God.
got the bug, at 3 months old, and it just never left me. But yeah, so I look at it like I've been doing this close to 40 years at this point in my
Oh
life.
man, no, that's amazing, and I think the passion still shines through for sure. I mean, like, even just the conversation to this point, but thinking as well in my time on set with you, a saying that you have of a bad day on set is better than a good day anywhere else.
Yeah, I
And
still believe that. I 100% believe that to be true. What, Chance, what is life but a really good collection of stories and a connection of person to person. You know, if you really boil it down, it's not much more than that. That's what the living experience is. You know, you can argue about anthropology and dates and how long humans walked on the planet, whatever. But the beginning of the day, we would go out, gather berries, hunt animals, whatever, and then we gather around the fire and tell stories. You know, and it's all about, hey, let me hear your stories and let me share my stories, or let's go have an experience together so it'll be our new story. And filmmaking, television is nothing but a collection of stories to share. And it's making human contact and giving an opportunity to interact with beautiful, wonderful, kind, creative people. I mean, what better job could there be in the world?
Makes me curious about the types of stories that we're telling. Do you feel at this moment in time, is there anything that you're gravitating towards? It doesn't necessarily have to be all directly connected, but do you have a sense of the question, and is there anything
Absolutely. No, for me, it's tricky for me because I have so many good friends and I love my friends so much. And everybody's got a story to tell. So I'm quick to want to help them tell the story that they're passionate about. That's what Valinor is. Valinor is not my story. Valinor is John Heller's story. He wrote it, he envisioned it. He brought me and Brian Stenerson, Brian and I co-directed the film. John wrote it. And John was a director of photography. And then John, Brian, myself, and Nathaniel Wolf, we all produced it. And when he brought it to me, I was very, very passionate about it because it's his story and I wanted to help him tell it. The stories that I want to make, I tend to lean toward stories that are based on true stories, you know, either based on true stories, inspired by true stories. A lot of people don't know the difference. If something's based on a true story, it's more likely to be very close to what really happened. Inspired by true stories mean it's much more loose. But I like based on a true story for a lot of reasons. And I like inspiring stories. I like stories that lift people up and encourage people and are more positive, maybe have a strong spiritual element. You know, those are the things that if I fell into a bucket of money, if I won the lottery tomorrow and I could just get, you know, oodles and oodles of time to write my own scripts or seek out my own scripts and make them, it'd be more along those lines. Because I just feel like, especially in this day and age, we can't have too much of that. And so much of the stuff that's scripted is either predictable or cyclical or negative or ugly. And I think that if you scroll down in Netflix to the based on a true story category and you start really watching those, the other thing that's fun about that category and that concept is it's very, very forgiving. You know, if you're watching a movie and it's scripted and you're watching it and you're like, okay, this is a really dumb storyline and I don't like it, whatever, whatever. This is a dumb movie or that was a corny line or whatever. You're going to be a lot more judgmental of it because it's based on imagination and you expect to be wowed and wooed and awed by this creative effort. But when it's based on a true story and you're like, well, that's weird, or I wouldn't have expected that to happen, or that seems kind of corny, but I guess it's okay because that's what really happened. And so the audience are much more forgiving and much more or much less judgmental of them when they're based on a true story. And it allows the filmmakers, the storytellers, to make a quicker, more genuine connection. Does that make sense?
Totally. I really never thought about it that way, but it makes a lot of sense when you spell it out like that.
Yeah, and I like to lift people up. I mean, chance I like to lift people up any way that I can, you know? Not to be negative, but some of my journeys, some of my experiences were really, really challenging and horrible. And I experienced my own fair share of getting kicked in the stomach or kicked in the teeth by life, and didn't always have somebody to lift me up. And I've always wanted to be the guy I wished I would have had during those times, anytime, you know, whether it's a friend or a text that I talk to over a text or a movie that I'm a part of. I just want to lift folks up and be encouraging, because even if I come across as, I don't know, silly or goofy or over the top, or maybe I've even called fake, or because I'm trying to be so encouraging and positive about stuff, but I don't care, because the people who I do get to connect with and celebrate life with, they know my heart and they know I'm trying to give them my best because they deserve it. Everybody deserves it. And you know, it's that old expression, let peace begin with me. But I think it goes beyond that. It also goes with, you know, let joy begin with me. Let laughter begin with me. Let kindness begin with me.
I think it's so empowering to take that perspective as well, because it really gives you an idea of the way that that choice to be positive can ripple outward, like you said, to be the kind of person that you would want to have around, and to aspire to be the kind of person that you know you want to be, and understanding that that's, a day-to-day decision that's made. How you're going to, conduct yourself and be an influence to the people around you. And it's really easy, I think, to get kind of discouraged about making a difference, here in air quotes.
Right.
But we sacrifice a lot of that agency, and even something as seemingly like simple as positivity. In my experience, it goes such a long way, and it really does ripple outward to where you could very realistically like have an effect on someone who then is in a different headspace that day, maybe is a little kinder in turn to the people around them. And I just think that's so empowering to take that perspective. And it's yeah, it's definitely something that I've always gotten from you.
Well, you know, I'll be crystal clear. The world's not easy. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ugliness going on. And I don't want to make it sound like it's, oh, don't worry. Just always look on the bright side of life. You know, it'll be fine. But, you know, well, let me just tell this story really fast. Once when I was a reporter, in about a 2 week span, I met two different men. Okay. And one of them had won the lottery. And then the other one was in a bad accident. He worked in the construction industry, and he was on sitting on a bridge, and a concrete wall fell above him, and he was sitting on the edge. And as the wall fell, it literally took both of his arms and both of his legs, and he fell into the river below, and it was cold, and because of the co water was cold. It actually saved his life. Now, I happened to do a story on both of these two men, two different stories within 2 weeks. And the one who won the lottery said, bar none, absolutely 100%, it was the worst thing that had ever happened to him. Lost his wife, kids got addicted to drugs. Within about 2 years, all of his money was gone. It's horrible. So this was the most horrible thing. If he had his life to do over again, he would have never won the lottery. The other man said the accident was the best thing that happened to him. It taught him so much about himself, and it was able to clarify his faith and his relationships with people and what his life was really meant for and what he needed to do next. And I asked him, I said, now, do you mean the outcomes of the accident or the accident itself? And he said, no, the accident itself, that was the best thing that's ever happened to me. So if you really stop and think about that, if you have 100 people out there and said, which would you rather, lose all four limbs or win the lottery? 100 out of 100 is going to say, I want to win the lottery. So it comes down to what's the difference? And the difference is, these it's your approach to it. You know, it's what you're going to learn from it, what you're going to make from it, what you're going to decide to do with the cards you've been given. You know, I have a dear friend right now who's battling cancer. They recently took a tumor out of her stomach, out of her abdomen that was about as big as my head. And she was laughing so hard going into the surgery. And she told those doctors, it's going to go great. She's got a very strong faith. And I was there before the surgery. And the doctors were like, I don't know if we're going to get it. And she's like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm ready to go if I don't make it, but if I make it, it's going to be awesome and we're going to party. She was making nurses who don't have any faith at all come and pray for her. She's like, hey, I got cancer. You can't say no to me. And she was just so sweet and so positive and so encouraging. And you know what? They got the entire tumor. And she's still in pain, but she's cracking up the whole hospital. And you know, and I think the point is that we get to decide what kind of life we want to have. If you know, if you have three jobs and you're frustrated because you're working all the time, you could just be happy that you're blessed enough to have three jobs. You know, if you're whatever your circumstances are, if you're sad because you don't have a job and you're miserable, well, you can be thankful that you have the time to you know, spend with your loved ones while you're looking for a job. It's all up to us. And we get to decide how we're going to live this life and how we're going to treat others.
Amen to that. I think that's actually a perfect transition to one thing that I want to hit before we wrap here. Just keeping things a little bit bite-sized, but very grateful for your time tonight, Taz.
Sorry, I
And
tend to go on and on and on.
no, we're right on track. And I love the stories. So no, take your time in responding, but I'm curious, as you laid it out, right, with life being what we make of it, and specifically with this choice to the way that you posed it of win the lottery or lose all four limbs. And the latter's not great. Like I understand people not going for that. But it is an illustrative story. And I also know, that for a little while now, you've been out living life on a farm, and in some ways, engaging in a more simple is not necessarily the right word, but or I guess like a simplified lifestyle in some sense, and just
Let's call it more organic lifestyle.
organic lifestyle. I like it.
I
I'm
wouldn't
just
say it's
curious.
simple.
Hey, touche. But
It's less technological and it's more organic, but it can be very tricky and complicated at times. Yeah, no, I live on a beautiful little homestead. It's not a farm. You can't call it a farm. A farm means you're creating products to sell to the public, and I'm not doing that. You know, my animals are for me, and the things that the farm gives us is for me and my family and my friends. Yes, we have, oh, it's an awesome life. You know, we just call it farming and filming around here. We have 9 little acres, in a rural area in Tennessee, with my wife and my son and my daughters, and we have 2 cows. We used to have about 10 sheep, but now we have 18 because all of my mamas had babies this spring, and we have all these beautiful little baby lambs running around and playing. We call it farm TV. We look out our back window, and I have a few trees that I had to take down, and they bounce around, play King of the Mountain on the tree trunks and do all these wonderful things. And we have 2 goats. We have about 40 chickens and about 5 ducks, 2 amazing barn cat sisters who are very sweet to us and very ferocious to the mice and the other critters around here that we don't want around. And we have 5 dogs, and
Wow.
everybody on the farm has a job.
So not
And
simple.
yeah, so not
Organic.
simple. My wife is the homesteading and the animal expert. I've learned mountains and mountains from her since we've been together, and I know a ton to the point to where I feel like I can hold my own with anybody in sort of a farming livestock kind of conversation. But she's got a degree in genetics, and she is just super genius at this stuff, and it's pretty spectacular. We do rotational grazing, and that makes it very affordable because they're eating our grass and they're keeping our fields very healthy. But that can be a bit of a delicate balance at times between the sheep and the goats and the cows, because they eat different grasses and you've got to let your fields rest and you have to have a different kind of fencing, and it's there's a lot to it, but it is awesome. And guess what? Homesteads are phenomenal places to make movies. You can make horror films, you can make period pieces, you can make nature films, you can do whatever you want. And so it's kind of like having a outdoor nature studio in my back pocket.
I think it's such a cool balance where I mean, you would tend to think of film as being so glitz and glam, which it can be for sure, but to I think ground yourself with this style of organic living, it just sounds so alluring to me and perhaps to others, but it sounds like a great combination that you've cooked up for yourself there with your family.
I wouldn't trade it for anything. Something always has to give. And like for me, what gives is I don't have any social media anymore. I find I don't need it. And I sometimes miss the news, and I find that I don't need it. I mean, I try to keep up in conversation, but it's so fun to talk to people and say, hey, what's going on in the world? I don't know anything. My friends at church or over the phone or whatever, and they'll say, oh yeah, there was a couple tornadoes in Nebraska a couple days ago, or this happened in the news, or that happened in the news. And I kind of feel like they filter it for me, and I don't have to worry about agendas or influencers or anything like that. I just take care of my farm and take care of work on my film projects and stay connected with my friends and family. And I couldn't be more blessed.
Beautiful. I think that's a good as a place as any to leave it. And based on that last response, can't
So what
exactly.
I just want to say
Yeah.
again, Woodbury 10 Theater on June the 4th. You can go to the website and buy the tickets. I highly recommend people grabbing their tickets, because once they sell out, they'll sell out. If we sell out fast enough, the theater has said that they will consider doing a second or even third screening in other theaters on the same night. But I highly recommend getting tickets as fast as possible. That's not a guarantee. People have said, if I'm not there at the premiere, how can I see the movie? We are in negotiations already with numerous streaming services. Of course, our film Bemidji and our film Ben and the Adventures of Ben and Kristoff are already on Amazon Prime for people to download and watch if that's what they want to do. Three-headed monster stuff is clicking right along. Oh, one other thing I wanted to say is we're also premiering the short film Family Heirloom before Valinor the night of the premiere as well. It's a beautiful little 10-12 minute piece that we also made that we're anxious to share with the world. Also, so everybody should come out and check it out. It's going to be a blast.
Awesome. Hey, perfect plug. No social media, but throwing it straight to the art itself. And so three-headed monster, people can See it all on the website there. You're still maintaining it.
Yeah, we still have the website and we have
Cool.
information there, threeheadedmonstermedia.com.
Perfect.
The other thing they can do is they can call me, they can text me, they can email me. They can email our website. We are accessible, and I think other people will probably be putting it on the social medias as well. Shoot, Chance, feel free to put it on yours.
I'm with you. I keep a very low profile with the couple things that I do have at this point, but really prefer not having those. So it's
Right.
hey man, you and me here for a chat. Maybe a few people hear it, and that's beautiful. But no, same thing. Just trying to stay connected. Really missed podcasting. I hadn't done it for a while, but it's such a great way to either reconnect with people or to make some new connections, gain some knowledge, and just have a good time. So I really appreciate you taking the time tonight, and I am so looking forward to Valinor in a few weeks here.
I gotta tell you, you did such an amazing job. And all I've ever wanted to do is make another movie with you in it. There is talk of more Valinor chapters and future sagas, and some other stuff going on. I don't want to say anything just yet, but if not Valinor, something, because I just love working with you to death. And I'm not getting paid to say this, and this is not a shameless plug. Chance, I just got to tell you are an amazing person, an amazing artist, and if anybody ever gets the chance to know you or spend time with you, they should seize it because you're an awesome dude, and I feel honored and blessed to have you as a friend.
Right back at you, Taz. Oh man, no, just hey, thanks again for everything, and we'll be in touch.
All right, got your back, brother. Whatever you need.
Likewise, I'll talk to you soon.
Right, bye.